Hey everyone, welcome back. Before we get started, I need to mention that some of these stories are pretty dark and disturbing. Story number 3 mentions murder, and story number 6 mentions murder and severe animal abuse. If you don't want to hear those stories, you can skip them by checking the timestamps where I'll have the stories labeled. And before we officially start, remember, you can send your stories at southerncannibal.com or you can email them at southerncannibalstories@gmail.com. Now if you're all ready, let's get started. I've been watching this channel for about 3 years now, and I'm a huge fan. I have a story from my youth that my friends and I still can't believe happened to us. When I was 13, I lived with my grandparents out in the middle of nowhere. Well, to me, it was pretty rural. There were 2 neighboring houses that you could see from our house, but the area was still isolated and far from gas and food. Well, my friends from school were really fascinated with this place because it was kind of lawless. There were no police on patrol, obviously, and barely any people around, so you could really do whatever you wanted within reason. One night, my 3 friends were staying over. My mother was working the night shift, and my grandparents had gone to bed pretty early. Us being the knuckleheads we were, made a plan to sneak out of the house come midnight to go gallivant. We successfully exited the house and were really contemplating on what to do next. Some of us wanted to build a Ouija board and try it out in the basement, but we eventually settled on a walk. Even though I was with my friends, the dark woods and the fields surrounding us looked creepy. It was a summer night, and the crickets and cicadas were deafening. There was also a heat wave, so it was one of those nights that remained humid and in the 80s, typical Pennsylvania summer. My friends and I reached a fishing lake and sat and played on the road for a while. We wrote with chalk and laughed about things at school and our peers. That was never enough for us though. We were really obnoxious kids, and we decided to start screaming as loud as we could into the wilderness at 3 a.m. We all took turns and did this for about 3 minutes straight. We got pretty bored of it quickly, and we started walking back, when we had started to hear things. You could hear a motorcycle starting up in the far distance. Then it was revving, and we thought we could hear more. No way that's because of us, I remember one of us saying. We all laughed and imagined what would go down if it were coming for us. Meanwhile, we're walking back to the house, and the motorcycle revving is getting louder, and there are definitely more than one. We hear them all taking off, and the sounds are getting closer and closer to us. We didn't know at the time, as we were in a valley and trying to decipher if they were really getting closer or not. Right when we reached a patch of woods, we saw it. A pair of headlights crested the hill, followed by about 3 others. The motorcycles began descending toward us. We could not believe that they might be here because of us, but we all instinctively hid behind trees and bushes, but still close to the road. The motorcycles literally stop right in front of where we are, and the lights are just shining into the forest. After about a minute, a man with a deep voice then says,
"Hey, come out! We'll find you anyway."
Nope. No one moved a hair. They kept the lights on us a while before slowly backing up and then heading back the way they came. We waited until the lights crested the hill again, and we began fast walking back toward my house once again. We didn't get far before, unbelievably, we had heard the motorcycles again. There were more this time, and they came back quickly. We barely had time to hide again, but we managed to crouch in a bush around the corner from where we hid the first time. The motorcycles parked at the spot, and we heard them again entering the woods. This was absolutely terrifying. They were looking for us. We got the attention of God knows how many country folks, and they were looking for us now. Just when it couldn't get any more intense, we then heard gunshots. I'm assuming it was a warning, but the fact that they were armed was daunting, and especially that they were so comfortable firing a shot. We stayed in this bush for what seemed like forever, but was really more like 20 minutes in reality. They finally left, and we were able to run the rest of the way home. I remember just sitting in silence for a while once we reached the house. We made light of the situation, and a lot of jokes subsequently about being chased by rednecks with guns, but I think of the implications as an adult. I understand that screaming is alarming, but their response was a bit extreme if you ask me. We were 13-year-old kids. Do these folks normally band together and go out and follow threats like that? I don't know, but it taught us to not ever do that again. I just remember it being the most raw fear that I've ever felt, being hunted like that. My name is Lacey. I have a neighbor named Bob that my husband and I have known for about 3 years. Bob is in his 80s and he's always super friendly. He would always say hi to me and my husband and talk to us about his everyday life. He was like a grandpa to us. Well, my husband and I had just had a baby. Bob would always ask how the baby was, and he even bought her an outfit, which was a big deal because Bob has no money. Bob is an overall friendly, nice guy. Well, yesterday I was sitting outside with my baby when Bob came walking over just talking to me about his day when a teenager walked by with his dog and stopped and took his headphones off and asked me if I was okay. Confused, I said yes, and again he asked aggressively again. Bob and I just looked at each other. Then the teen continued to walk with his dog, then stopped again and asked if me and Bob were related. I said no, that he's just my neighbor. Then the teen told me that Bob was a sex offender. I looked at Bob and we kind of just thought the teen was crazy. Well, after that, I didn't want to go outside anymore, so I told Bob that my baby and I are going in and said goodbye. I had an unsettling feeling, so I called my husband to tell him what had happened, just thinking I came across a crazy teenager. Well, my husband looked Bob, our neighbor, up in the system, and boy, did my world get turned upside down. Bob is a level 3 sex offender and is a lifetime register. He went to jail for 3 years back in 2017 for 9 different counts. I wanted to throw up upon finding out this information. I had this man around my newborn baby, and my husband and I have always been friendly with him for years. We're now avoiding him at all costs. I would have never guessed that the sweet old man that has never said a bad word in front of us was a level 3 sex offender. It just really goes to show you that you can't trust anyone. When I was growing up, I lived in Rochester, New York. Most of my neighbors were kind, friendly people, except for the house that was 2 up from mine. That house held a family that was made up of a mother of 3, and her husband was the youngest child's father. The older 2 had different fathers. The oldest girl mostly tried to stay away from the house with another family. The middle boy, who is my age, unfortunately didn't have the same option of his older sister, and instead tried to befriend the neighborhood kids to stay away from his house that way. The youngest was very little, 3 to 5 over the years, but wasn't watched well at all, as she was found in random backyards and just around the street constantly. Most of the parents on that street actively kept us kids away from that family, as I found out when older that the parents were known drug addicts and that the father regularly beat everyone in the house. The parents would also throw crazy parties and lock the kids up in the basement while they did so. I remember one day he wasn't home and they had thrown a mattress that they were planning on throwing out into the backyard, and so all of us kids were jumping on it. Well, he came home and freaked out and chased us all out of the yard. When I was 8 years old, my mother and I were away visiting family for Christmas, when my mother got the call from my dad who said the whole neighborhood was awoken in the middle of the night to gunshots. The parents had gotten into an argument, and so the kids, like they normally did, locked themselves in a room and hid. Unfortunately, the father grabbed his gun and shot and killed the mother. He then shot himself in the jaw, effectively blowing half of it off. All while those poor children were hiding upstairs listening to their mother get murdered. Surprisingly, he only received 15 to 20 years in prison, not even life. All 3 kids went to the family, luckily, and I truly hope they're doing okay. In 2018, I moved into a small 2-story property in England with my then boyfriend. It was in a quiet cul-de-sac with houses crammed together all facing each other. I am very introverted, and I don't typically make a habit of socializing much with neighbors. Still, we naturally ran into a few and exchanged pleasantries, as you normally would, right? One of our neighbors, Greg, was incredibly welcoming right off the bat. He was an older gentleman, the kind who'd stop you for a chat that would drag on and on until you made an excuse for why you really had to get going. He shared local stories, asked about and took note of our birthdays, and even invited us around for a garden party where any and all were welcome. His house was directly across the street from where I lived, with his windows in clear view of mine. A couple of years passed by, and during this time, my boyfriend and I split up. Although I never expressly shared this news with my neighbors, word must have gotten around with his car missing from the driveway. He moved out and left the country, but we stayed in touch regularly as friends. Having the house to myself felt lonely, so I got a cat to keep me company. He quickly became and still is my world. Greg would often flag me down to talk whenever he caught me leaving or returning to my house. Annoying, but I could live with it. I would update my ex about the weird little interactions with Greg, which we both found amusing to gossip about. On one such incident was when Greg came to my door to hand me over two of my parcels, one of which was a large table that he had yet to retrieve from his house. I had been raiding in Elder Scrolls Online at the time, doing a deathless speedrun for an achievement. Given the time constraint in my game, I told him I'd leave the door unlocked so he could simply put it by my door. I sat back down on my desk, put my headset on, and my group charged in at the final boss. I heard my front door opening, followed by the sound of my large parcel being placed down. Then footsteps approached me from behind. I peered behind me to see Greg just standing there, eyes fixated on me. My fear of disappointing my raid group, I continued playing until we killed the boss, then took off my headset. Greg's face lit right up, and he went on to tell me how amazing it was to watch me play. I got the impression that he'd never seen someone use a keyboard, let alone play games. He begged me to teach him and rambled on. He was clearly intoxicated, so I just laughed it off and gave a non-committal response. Despite repeated attempts to politely make him leave, he could not be persuaded. He seemed disappointed when I walked over to my door and opened it to clearly signal that it was time for him to go, but he actually left without further incident. Now, in the UK, houses often have individual outdoor bins for trash, which have to be rolled out to the street the night before collections take place. You're expected to bring the bins back to your property after collection. I noticed someone kept bringing my bins back in for me. Was I blocking someone's car by being too slow to do it? Around that same time, I had also noticed someone had been using my bins. I brought it up to Greg one time he pulled me over to park, and he said the same thing had been happening to him. Maybe it was petty of me, but I decided to tape an old phone with a surveillance app to my window overlooking the bins to try and figure out who it was. Lo and behold, it was Greg. I chalked it up to him having run out of bin space after the local council moved from weekly to bi-weekly collections due to staffing issues. Although it bothered me, my desire to avoid confrontation won in the end. Christmas rolled around, and the COVID-19 pandemic was in full swing. One late evening, I had heard a knock at my door, and I walked over to see who it was. I had no peephole, so I opened the door not really knowing what to expect. Greg stood at my doorstep, which was not particularly unusual. I'd gotten all used to his antics. I immediately caught a strong smell of alcohol, but he spoke before I had time to process. He told me that he had a Christmas present for me, and he handed over a red gift bag with colored tissue paper covering the contents. "I really want to give you a kiss on the cheek, but I can't, not with this pandemic going around," he said. That gave me the heebie-jeebies, so I did all I could to politely end this interaction and then retreat back inside. He held me up by rambling on about God knows what. I firmly told him that I was busy and that I needed to go. That's when he laid a hand on my shoulder, leaned in, and kissed my cheek. Then he walked off in the direction of his house. I closed the door and just simply stood there for a few moments, just in shock. The present was odd. Underneath the tissue paper were two bottles of Belgian beer, a can of half-eaten Pringles, sour cream and onion in case you're wondering, and a small plastic bag containing little chocolates. I recognized the latter item. A next-door neighbor with young children had come around to put these plastic bags with chocolate and a handwritten note through everyone's mail slots just a few weeks prior. It was a really sweet gesture and probably something they came up with to keep the stir-crazy kids busy. Upon inspecting the re-gifted chocolates, I noticed that he'd even forgotten to remove the note from the neighbor. The kiss and gift gave me bad vibes, and I regretted accepting it. I decided that I was done being Miss Polite and resolved to be firm in my future rejections. On the second day of the new year, I was really feeling lazy, and I ordered food delivery. A mere 5 minutes after receiving my order, there was a knock at my door. Knowing the delivery driver hadn't forgotten anything, I concluded that this had to be Greg. And then it clicked for me. He'd often turn up immediately after anything was delivered to my door. He was constantly watching my house. Was he dumping trash in my bins as an excuse to hang around my house? He called out for me through the door. I felt too uncomfortable to answer and just retreated upstairs out of view of the windows. Later that night, he came back and kept knocking, but once again, I ignored it in hopes of him going away. The following day, I actually contacted the police to file a harassment report. I felt sheepish doing so. Was it really that bad? He was just a lonely old man, and I guess I just hadn't been firm enough. Upon being asked whether I wanted the police to speak with them, I told them I'd do it myself. I just wanted the report on file in case anything else happened. I would later become grateful for filing that report. Greg turned up at my door a few days later, telling me how worried he was about me. I told him verbatim, "I think it's best if we don't have any contact going forward." His response was eerie. "I just wanted to be your friend." I held my ground, cut the conversation short, and then closed the door. Finally, it's over, I thought. A year went by without incident. Everything seemed fine, with no knocks on the door or unwanted conversations while I was outside. One night in winter, I was leaving my house to get groceries. It was completely dark outside, save for a lamppost casting some sparse light into the street. My driveway was at the side of my house where the bins were stored. This driveway was blocked in by a tall panel fence to add some privacy, seeing as the kitchen window was directly next to it. You could see right into my kitchen and living room through this window. As I was outside locking the door, I saw a figure in the dark slinking out of my driveway and behind the fence. I immediately unlocked the door and went back inside. I mean, it was dark. I could have imagined it, but my gut told me otherwise. Was there someone waiting for me behind the fence? Ultimately, I trusted my instincts and decided to forego the groceries for the night. I bought and mounted a motion sensor light to illuminate my driveway. The memory of the shadowy figure quickly faded in my mind, and the new light really gave me some comfort that I'd at least be alerted if someone was lurking outside my window. A couple of months after the incident, I was in my kitchen getting some food for my beloved cat. The window was directly to my left, around 3 feet away from where I stood. As I dumped the cat food into a bowl, I suddenly became aware of my motion sensor light being on. I scanned the outside, not seeing anything, until my eye landed on something in the bottom corner of the window. I squinted, trying to make out what I was looking at. It somehow wasn't properly illuminated. I kept staring for what must have been 30 seconds. The light outside remained on. Suddenly, Greg pops into view directly outside. He'd been crouched down, peering in from the corner of the window. I'm normally someone who's cool as a cucumber. I never raise my voice or yell. But I truly lost it at that moment, screaming, "What the hell are you doing?" He just stood there, then nonchalantly asked, "Are you all right?" I just kept screaming, but now it was, "Dude, why are you here?" He walked off into the dark, and I immediately called the police. Typically, the police in England leave something to be desired, but I have to give them credit for how they really handled the situation. They took my statement over the phone and gave me a reference number. I received a couple of phone calls with updates, and I was told they'd bring him to the station. I was also informed that he was known to the police for having previously followed young women. Sometime later, he was arrested at his property in front of a wife that I didn't even know existed. They did this to scare him, according to the officer I spoke to. It was to make a point. Sadly, he received nothing more than a police caution, which forbade him from being on my side of the cul-de-sac or contacting me. Still, it seemed to work. The window incident was the last real interaction that I ever had with Greg. I did see him staring at me in the shower from his window one time when I forgot to close the blinds, but nothing else. I have since moved far away. So Greg, you're really gross, and now everyone in the neighborhood knows you're a creep.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
I'm a 28-year-old female for reference. Please be kind. This is my first post on this subreddit. I may not be the best storyteller, so please forgive me for the rambling and for the length. Anywho, this happened for a year and a half starting in November of 2011. I was living by myself in a two-bedroom house that was at the end of the street close to an open secluded field. It wasn't in the safest area, but it wasn't in the ghetto either. Somewhere in between. I never really hung out with friends because of work, my schedule, errands, taking classes, etc. And all of my family lived out of state, so I was basically always alone. Which is how I like to be though. I mean, I'm pretty independent and I live a very private life. Also, I couldn't afford a car at the time, so I just walked everywhere. I had to walk by my neighbor's house in order to get into the main road and towards the park, where I did most of my jogging. My neighbor, who lived four houses down from me, took notice of this and took it upon himself to try and save me from my loneliness. I'm pretty predictable, and my schedule is the same on an almost day-to-day basis. Wake up at 5:40 a.m. to go jogging, work at 6:30, lunch break at 11 for about an hour, go home at 4, our class at 5:30, and another jog at 7:30 p.m. Then I'm home by 8:30. It's bad, I know, to do the same thing almost every day, but it's easier for me to remember what I have to do, and it sets a sort of comfort to me. I get in the zone. I am, however, always aware of my surroundings, and started to notice my neighbor just standing out on his front lawn at all the times that I was out and about. Whenever I would go home, he would watch me until I reached my door, then turn around and start walking towards his house. After a few weeks of him giving me the stare down, he had started with small talk. "Hey, how are you?" In which I would just give him a polite nod and just a mumbled, "Good," and a goodbye wave. As stated before, I'm quite shy and I like to keep to myself. Each time he would say a little more. "Hey, so you live alone in that house? Where do you work? How come you don't seem to get any visitors?" I tried to stay polite but evasive in my responses and not give too much personal information away. "I work in town." "Oh, I'm a very busy person." Nervous laughter, fumbling with my headphones as I give him another awkward wave. This went on for a few months now with him trying to pry me with more information and even trying to block me from jogging around him. I noticed him becoming more aggressive and needing to know my whereabouts. And once even caught him snooping through my mail before replacing my envelopes back in the box and then walking away. Once my best friend came by on my birthday to give me a present and my cake, the next day creepy neighbor guy was drilling me as I was walking by. "Who was that guy that stopped by yesterday? Was he your boyfriend? He stayed for like 3 hours. What were you doing?" etc. I became very annoyed and just shrugged, saying, "That's none of your business." Cue the fake smile and turn my speed walking into a slow jog. At this point, I had had about enough of this guy. I've been polite, but very obviously clear that I wasn't interested in casual conversations or being constantly pressed to speak and interrogated about my personal business. I enjoy being on my own. I'm not much of a talker, and I really hate feeling forced to. One day, while returning from one of my evening exercise routines, I was speed walking to my house. Out comes the said neighbor running towards me with a very angry expression on his face. He blocks my path and stands directly in front of me with his arms crossed against his chest.
"We need to talk now!" he screamed.
Being so surprised by his outburst, I took a few steps back. He was a big guy, husky and tall. I'm fairly small, 5'3", 115 pounds. He towered over me. "About what?" I asked. He then says, "Every day I see you walking around and around for hours and hours all by yourself. I know all about you. This is my neighborhood, and I know everyone and everything that goes on here. You don't have any friends or family, and you're very lonely. I can save you. We can be great friends. I love you." I took several steps back with my arms out, afraid of what he may or may not do, and because I was feeling incredibly uncomfortable. And then I felt my rage start to build up.
"First of all," I screamed, "you don't even freaking know me. How the hell can you say you love me and know everything about me? I happen to like being on my own, and I really enjoy living a private life. I've been polite to you thus far, but you obviously can't take a hint and leave me the hell alone. I've given you no indication whatsoever that I want to be your friend, and I've been quite obvious in letting you know that your constant snooping and barrage of questions not only annoys me, but makes me feel uncomfortable as well. So since you can't take a subtle hint, I'll be clear. Leave me the hell alone." He chuckles, then he giggles like I said the funniest joke of all time. Meanwhile, I'm standing there fuming because I'm not used to screaming and spending my energy in that way. I'm soft-spoken, and it really takes a lot for me to raise my voice. You have to push me to my limit. He stops laughing long enough to then say, "I know you need saving, and I'm your neighbor, so that means I love you, and I love you very much. I'm not a creepy guy." He then gets very serious again. "I just know you like the back of my hand. I know that I can save you and make you happy. I know you don't like to be alone, and I can't stand the fact that you walk everywhere and exercise all the time. You don't need to exercise every day. I hate that you do that. You need to come over to my house instead and have a few beers with me. Have fun. Live a little. Stop being so serious all the time." I replied with, "Leave me alone. Again, you don't know crap about me. I enjoy exercising, and who the hell are you to tell me what I can and can't do?" I quickly noped the hell out and ran to my house, slamming the door behind me. I can hear him chuckling again. I called a friend and told them what happened. They suggested calling the cops, but for whatever reason, I didn't. I started to become paranoid after that incident, and if I saw him already standing on his front lawn, I just stayed inside. I also stopped walking down the street that led out to the main part of town. Instead, I detoured and walked through the secluded open field by my house. I opened up a gym membership so I can still exercise without him seeing me jog around the block, and I pretty much just tried to avoid him as much as possible. But one rainy day, my ninja skill slipped, and he saw me cutting through the field. He started running full speeds towards me, but I reached my house in time to lock the doors and then cower inside. A few moments later, he was banging on my door saying my name. He knew from my mail that he spied on, and he was saying, "Open the door, now!" I waited until he left and cautiously opened the door, and a small folded piece of paper fell. I picked it up and relocked the door. It said, "Call me AJ," and then his phone number, XOXOXO. I ripped it up, called the same friend as before, and complained. Once again, they advised I called the cops, but at this point my lease was up, and I was moving in less than a week, so I was just kind of like whatever about the whole thing. Fast forward to moving day. I'm with a few friends, some work colleagues, and we're packing up my stuff into several cars and cleaning everything up. As we're finally driving down the street one last time,
Out comes the creepy neighbor, and then he says, "Why didn't you tell me you were moving? You're supposed to tell me everything." As I'm in the car, he's shouting this, and my friend pulls down the window a bit and then says, "I thought you knew everything, bud." We then laugh and drive away, and I never see him again. Well, I hope you all enjoyed listening to this. It may not be super creepy, but it sure was a very uncomfortable situation for me. There were times where I really felt like a prisoner in my own home. I'm really glad it's over. Thanks again to all of you who listened. Growing up in the bottom was sometimes difficult. When the flood came every year, it severely limited my roaming area, unless the flood was actually in our yard, which was a rare occurrence. Most of the kids from the bottom would normally wind up playing football or baseball in our yard. Altogether, there were probably 8 or 10 kids that would get together. The kids from the bottom and some other neighbors. We'd choose teams and play whatever game was popular at the moment. When we moved away in November of 1984, it was a sad time for me because I was leaving behind the only friends I'd ever known, some of whom I'd known since kindergarten. I was 15 when we moved away from Kennefic in the bottom. We moved for several reasons. My father got a better job offer in another state. My mother had attended a college for cake decorating and wanted to start her business in a bigger town. And our trailer house was starting to show its age. I think the most important reason my parents decided to move was that the population of Kennefic and the bottom had really grown. The bottom being what it was, it attracted a less than perfect quality of resident. In the last few years that we lived there, the police were coming out more and more often. The bottom seemed to become a refuge for those who weren't on the best of terms with the law enforcement community. There were more and more cars and trucks driving faster than was safe at all hours of the night. It was a rare weekend that we didn't see blue and red lights go whizzing by our house or hear a screaming siren. One night a helicopter landed in the field across from our house and was met by an ambulance just a few minutes later. We heard that someone had broken into a house in the bottom and had been shot. It wasn't that tight-knit little community anymore. There were more and more strange cars and faces. The summer of 1984 was eventful for me on several levels. I turned 14 in July, and I got my first razor amongst my other gifts. My voice had finally stopped squeaking. I grew to be about 5'10". I was a cornerback on the high school football team. Dad was teaching me to work on cars by fixing up an old 73 Cougar for me to have when I got my license. And I was in love with a girl who lived down the street from us. Her name was Heather, and she consumed my every thought, wish, and desire. We'd known each other since her family moved in about a year after us, and we'd ridden the bus to school together for almost 9 years. She was my first crush, my first kiss, my first love, my first heartbreak, my first everything. Heather was a year younger than me, and we went from hating each other in elementary school to tolerating each other in junior high. When I started high school, she was still in junior high, so we went to different schools. I can remember the first day I noticed her as something other than that skinny little black-haired girl from down the street. It was when school started after the Christmas vacation, and she got on the bus and was wearing new glasses. Weird, I know, but those glasses seemed to magnify the prettiest green eyes I'd ever seen. She caught me staring at her as she walked by to sit with her friends and smiled at me. Braces! Wow! By the time she started high school, the next year we were a serious item. Her mother and my mother were good friends, and her mother would always say something that would embarrass the crap out of me. "You two will have the cutest kids." That or, "I think I hear wedding bells." Of course she was teasing, but still. Every time we left her house to go for a walk or do homework or whatever, her dad would give me a sternest look and would say, "Be nice." I knew exactly what he meant, and I was always nice, for the most part, that is. Heather had diabetes, and it always amazed me that she had to get shots every day. Every single solitary day. I was really in awe of her bravery and how she just shrugged it off as just a part of her life. She broke her ankle one summer from jumping off a horse that got spooked, so every afternoon I would ride the bus past my house to hers and carry her books in for her, and then I'd walk home. Her mom would always invite me to stay for dinner, but I never did. About a week after she broke her ankle, we came home from school one day, and there was a new trailer house in the lot next to hers. Her mom told us that she had already met the family, and they had a boy my age and another son who was 8 or 9. I met them a few days later when they had started riding the school bus. Robert was actually just a year younger than Heather. He was a tall, gangly, clumsy type of kid who wore thick glasses and was deep into Dungeons and Dragons. He was quiet and he kept to himself. We invited him to play football and do other stuff with us, but he was never really that interested. He read a lot and stayed indoors. Heather had already told me that he watched her whenever she was outside, but whenever she waved, he acted like he didn't see. He was an okay guy, I guess. We got along and he taught me to play Dungeons and Dragons and another game that I can't even remember now. His younger brother was named Jason. Now, Jason was an odd duck. His head was way too big for his body, and his teeth and ears were too big for his head. He was mouthy too. Anything anyone had ever seen or done, he or someone he knew had seen it or done it better. It got so bad that we would actually make up words about things just to see if he would take the bait, and he never let us down. Oh no. He knew all about the Chevrolet Z56 12-cylinder six-wheeled car that was coming out the following year. He knew all about the new bullets that the army was developing that could shoot someone around corners and go through tanks. He was also a klepto. Pens, rulers, Hot Wheels, baseball cards, ball caps, and anything else that wasn't guarded was fair game. The bad thing was that whenever anyone called him on it, he'd insist that his aunt or a teacher gave it to him. Robert and even his own mother would always validate his story. Jason was always the instigator. He would tell one kid that another was talking about him just to see the reaction. Whenever we played a game, he would always want a do-over if things didn't go his way, and if we refused, he would say we were liars and cheaters. It didn't take very long for Jason to become unwelcomed around us. One day, Heather caught him behind their wheelhouse bent over something. She asked what he was doing, but he didn't hear, so she walked over to see. He had found a dead bird and he was pulling the feathers and skin off of it. Heather said that she screamed and asked what the hell he was doing. She said that he never moved and just looked over his shoulder at her with a spooky grin and said that he wanted the skull. About a month later, Heather's father caught him inside the wheelhouse putting wrenches into his pockets. He grabbed Jason by the arm and took him to his house to make him admit to his mother that he was stealing from him. When Jason's mother opened the door and saw her baby being held by the arm, well, she went crazy and she had started yelling at Heather's father, telling him that she was going to sue him. As Heather was telling me all this at their kitchen table, her dad walked by and said that Jason was a damned creepy little kid. One day, a week or so later, Robert showed up at my house and asked if I'd seen Jason. He was supposed to be home for dinner, and it was almost dark. I hadn't seen Jason, and I relayed this to Robert. My mother heard Robert asking me about this, and told him that she'd seen Jason over in the field across the road. She said that he was playing with a dog in the door of the old abandoned barn about an hour earlier. Robert and Jason missed school the next 2 or 3 days, and the next time I saw Robert on the bus, he told me that he had found Jason in the barn with the dog. Jason had killed the dog and was skinning it. He told me that he had blood all over him like he played in it. Robert said he ran home, leaving Jason there by himself, and told his dad about it. He and his father went back to the barn, and Jason was still inside with the dead dog. Robert said his father grabbed Jason and was dragging him out of the barn when he then saw all of the skulls. He told me that there were skulls of all different kinds up on a shelf. He didn't recognize a lot of them, but he did see little bird and mouse skulls. He said that there were a lot of bigger skulls there too, probably 15 or 20. He said that they were black and brown and still had some skin left on them. Flies were everywhere, and it smelled horrible. Of course, I went straight to that old barn after school that afternoon, but someone had taken it all away. It did smell horrible in there, and someone had spread sawdust all over the dirt floor. Robert told me that his father and mother had a huge fight the night that they found Jason in the barn. Robert's father is planning to take Jason to a doctor, and his mother just kept insisting that he was just a little boy doing normal little boy things. Well, Jason wasn't on the bus for 3 or 4 weeks after that. When he did go back to school, he wasn't the same person. He didn't speak to anyone or respond when spoken to. Obviously, everyone had a million and one questions, but he just ignored them all. He just stared out the window with his mouth opened, and he never said a word. I realize now that he must have been medicated. Eventually, the attempts to get his attention turned to ear flicks and swats to the back of his head, but there was never a response. Robert, his brother, made everyone leave him alone. Then one afternoon, it was raining and we were almost home when Jason started hitting himself. At first, no one noticed, but then this kid Bobby turned around in his seat and he told Robert that Jason was hitting himself in the face and that he was getting blood all over his clothes. Robert ran up and sat with Jason, holding his wrist so he would stop. That was the last time I saw Jason before I moved 2 months later. When we moved, I had called Heather as soon as I knew our new number. We already said our goodbyes, but we promised to keep in touch. Heather and I kept in touch through letters and cards mostly. This was before cell phones, and the long-distance charges cost too much, so I was really limited to an hour on the weekend. Heather told me most of the important news through letters whenever she didn't want to be overheard telling me any gossip that was really good and juicy. This was before email as well. This is also how I found out that she had gone on a date with someone else, through a letter. Anyways, Heather told me about how Jason was back in school and how he'd gotten into a fight at least once a week. She said that he was talking now, but only when someone talked to him, and even then it was only a one-word response. He had always had a scowl on his face, and he walked around with his hands clenched into fists. She said that someone visited the house on Tuesday and Thursdays and stayed for about 3 hours and then left. Sometimes she could hear Jason screaming at whoever it was. She told me that he was getting weirder by the day, that he was up all hours of the night standing at his window and looking outside for hours. Heather also told me that she thought Jason's mom was on drugs. Evidently, she had spoken to Heather and called her Stephanie one time, and then Sandra the next. Over the next few years, Heather and I continued to keep in touch. She told me about her prom, and she even sent pictures. By this time, I'd met my next love, and I wasn't so bothered by someone else kissing on Heather. Actually, I was jealous, but I never said so. I graduated high school in 1986, and I sent Heather an invitation. She graduated in 87, and she sent me one of hers in return. I actually still have it somewhere. She also sent a wedding announcement the following year. That one hit me pretty hard. But by then, I was able to genuinely be happy for her. They didn't actually get married though, and I cried with Heather over the phone when she told me about their breakup. I got engaged myself about 6 months after that, and I joined the army about 2 months later. We still sent letters and cards several times a year. Occasionally, there would be a tidbit about Jason. He stole a bunch of stuff from the cars that were parked by our old house when the flood came one summer. Someone saw him going from car to car and called the police. He broke all the windows out of another neighbor's house while they were gone for the weekend. He got caught shooting a pellet gun at someone's horses once. He was also accused of molesting a little girl from the bottom, but nothing ever came of it. In December of 1990, my unit went to Saudi Arabia for Desert Storm and Desert Shield. I sent Heather my APO address, and I told her how my fiancé had dumped me the previous month. She sent back a box of homemade chocolate chip cookies with a note that said not to worry, that they weren't sugar-free. She made me promise to be careful, and told me that she was afraid for me, and to promise to write as often as I could, which I did. I got a letter from her in the last part of 1991 that she had sent about 3 weeks earlier. We were still overseas, and had no clue when we'd get to go home again. When I opened the letter, there was also a newspaper clipping. The clipping was from a local newspaper and was a story about a 15-year-old youth who had shot another neighbor in an attempted robbery and was being charged with murder. The name of the youth was withheld because of his age, but it listed the name of the woman, Valerie. At first, I thought Heather sent the clipping because we both knew Valerie. She lived 2 houses down from me, between the house where I lived and Heather's. She was a nice, bubbly, very happy woman. She had a huge Great Dane named Rontu, and she painted. She was one of those people who was never in a bad mood and never had a bad word to say about anyone. She was one of the few genuinely nice people that I've ever known. She was one of those people who really made the world better just by being in it. My heart stopped for a minute when I realized it was her who had been shot. I harbored a secret crush on Valerie when I lived there. After I read the clipping, I read Heather's letter. After she told me that she hoped I was okay and would be coming home soon, she then relayed what had happened. Evidently, Jason had met some of the rougher elements who lived in the bottom and had started using drugs. He'd been in some more trouble here and there, and it got worse after his mother left earlier that year. Robert got married and moved to another town. He visited one night, and he and Jason got into a huge fight. Heather was able to hear everything because it was a cool night, and she had opened the windows for some fresh air. Her parents had gone somewhere, and the air conditioner was too loud. She went on to say that she had heard them fighting and crashing into the walls and breaking things. She told me that one of them got pushed into a window and broke it. She said that Jason was screaming so loud that his voice would crack. After about 15 minutes of this, it got quiet and then Robert left. Heather said that she could hear Jason crying and ranting and screaming to himself. Then she saw him walking in front of her house toward Valerie's place. Valerie's husband worked at a grocery store called Brookshire's Brothers in Dayton during the day and then went to college at night. He was also in the National Guard and was gone 1 week in a month and 2 weeks during the summer. Instead of getting up early on Saturday morning and driving to wherever he went for his National Guard weekends, he would leave on Friday night. Whenever he was gone, Valerie's niece would stay with her. Jason was in love with her niece. I can't remember her name now, and I never knew her when I lived there. Heather told me that she didn't give him much thought because she was just trying to concentrate on her books. But then she heard shouting, and then saw Jason storming back into his house. She just assumed that Valerie didn't want him at her house, especially if he was high on something. Heather, who was a junior in college at this time, was studying, and she forgot all about it until she had heard shouting again from Valerie's place about an hour and a half later. She said that she could hear crying too. She could also hear Jason shouting. She turned off her desk lamp so she could see outside better, and when she looked, the front door of Valerie's house was standing open. Heather said that she was just getting ready to call the police when she heard the shot and then saw Jason run out the door and then head back towards his own house. Heather said it scared her so bad that she couldn't move. She sat in the dark watching and listening, but afraid to draw attention to herself by moving or making any noise. Heather said that he was home for about 15 minutes and then he got into his car and left. When he was out of sight, she ran right over to Valerie's house. Mr. Votel, the neighbor who lived between Heather and Valerie, was already there and was calling the police. Valerie's niece was sitting on the sofa with her legs pulled up to her chest, hugging her knees. She was hysterical and crying. Mr. Votel wouldn't let Heather go into the bedroom. Heather said that he told her in a voice that was much older than it should have been to keep the door closed, that she didn't want to see anything in there. Then he told her to take care of the little girl. They then waited until the authorities arrived. Heather went on to tell me that according to the niece's statement, Jason asked if he could sit and talk for a few minutes, but Valerie didn't think it was a good idea. The niece said that his nose and lip were bleeding, and that he had cuts and scratches on one arm that were bleeding. Valerie had asked him to leave, and when he didn't, she got up to call the police, and that is when he started shouting and left. The girl said about 20 minutes later, something hit the side of the house, and the dog Rontu had started barking. When Valerie opened the door to see what happened, a man in a black ski mask forced her back inside with a pistol in her face. He made her lock Rontu in the bathroom and threatened to shoot him if she didn't do as he asked. When he started talking, the niece recognized his voice and also recognized the cuts on his arm. After the dog was in the bathroom, he made them go into the bedroom and lay face down on the bed. He wanted to know if they had any money. The niece said that she was silent for a minute. And then she heard the gun shoot and felt the bed jerk. Then she heard Jason run out of the house. The police found Jason a few hours later at a friend's house where he was arrested. Jason was later tried as an adult and sent to prison. I don't really remember the length of the sentence. As far as I know, he's still incarcerated. I'll always remember him being a weird little kid. I can remember talking about him to some of my new friends after I'd moved and telling him that he was the type of kid that would grow up to be a terrorist or lead a cult. I guess I had him pegged from the start. I will have a link to the story about the incident from the Houston Chronicle linked in the description of this video. I guess you're all wondering about Heather and I. We eventually got married, but not to each other. She married a man that she met in her senior year of college, and they now live in Conroe, Texas with two girls now. I married a woman from Argentina, and I've been happy ever since. It's funny sometimes how life works out for the best in spite of some bad times. Hey everyone, that's about it for today's stories. If you have your own story that you would like to send, you can send it in at southerncannibal.com or you can email it at southerncannibalstories@gmail.com. I look forward to telling your story. Have a good night or good day, everyone. And remember to always...